D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, Connor Newt here with you. Let's go to our phone line. Driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcoming our friend Terry McCormick of Main Street Media as we continue talking Titans. Hello, Terry. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We are doing well. Thank you for joining us once again. So, Terry, we're about 3 weeks into training camp. It feels a lot longer than that, but we're about 3 weeks into training camp. What is an opinion you had at the start of training camp that has changed over the past 3 weeks?
That's a good question. You're hitting me with a hard one right out of the gate.
I try.
I think one of the things that I like that maybe I wasn't certain that I was going to like, I think that the starters, mostly the starting 11 on offense and for the most part the starting 11 on defense, maybe a corner or two here, struggling a little bit. But I think starter-wise, I think the Titans maybe hold up and match up a little better than maybe I thought at some positions, especially on the offensive line. But I'm still very concerned about depth at a number of spots.
The Seattle Seahawks will be here for a joint practice on Friday. The two teams play in the preseason at Nissan Stadium on Sunday. What player versus player matchup will you be watching most closely on Friday that will give you a sense of where the Titans are this far into camp?
Well, I want to see what Cam Ward and the receivers do against the Seahawks defense, because I think that's going to be a very, very good test for Cam and for this group of receivers. And then also, you know, do we really want to know how bad Jackson Smith and Jigba might dice up the secondary? That might not be very pretty.
Oh, I had to turn my mic on there, Terry. Terry McCormick from Main Street Media. Now, the offensive line, because I thought after the first preseason game, those guys get a really good job. And I think subsequently in the last few practices, you've seen that offensive line continuing to develop. Where do you think they are as a unit right now?
I think they're starting to come together. I think, Schlotman has been better than I thought he would be, having never really been a full-time starter before. And Carmona's coming on. It feels like he's going to maybe solidify that right guard position before preseason is up. And J.C. Latham has played really well thus far. He's practiced well, played well in the game. I think, if Dan Moore can hold up his end of the bargain on the left side, I think you know that Peter Skoronski is going to be okay at left guard. In fact, they just, paid him with a big contract. Then maybe this offensive line won't be as bad as we think, as long as they don't have any injuries. I'm really, really worried about the interior depth and the tackle depth. I think they may have to do a little waiver wire hunting, especially at tackle, if they don't find somebody to step up here pretty quickly as a swing tackle.
Now, Terry, we were talking earlier about the defensive line and how critical they were going to be, one, to the success of the defense, but I think overall to the success of the quarterback. Do you think they have to be, a top 3, 4, 5 defense in order to really allow Cam Ward to develop the way he needs to?
Yeah, I think this team's going to go as far as the defense can carry them. I really believe that. I think, you've got a young quarterback who's, still finding his way. You've got, an offensive line that's trying to reestablish itself. The running game looks pretty good so far, and you're maybe starting to get excited about some of the skill position players on offense. But I do think that the offense is going to take longer to gel. And I think the front seven has got to carry this team in the early going of the season. And then going against those guys every day in practice should only make the offense get better.
So, Terry, along those lines, I'm looking at the layers in that front seven. And dare I say there's a little bit of depth on the defensive line, especially with some of the guys I can see rotating in there. I feel like there's the material there of a really good unit.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's really by design. When they went out, last year it was basically Jeffrey Simmons and whatever other guys were still around that had a pulse on that defensive line. This year, they went out and, with the switch to a 4-3, they brought in Solomon Thomas. They brought in John Franklin Myers. They brought in Jermaine Johnson. They brought in Jacob Martin. And they can just, as Robert Saleh wants to do, come in waves with that front four and try to keep people fresh and really just, you know, tee off on the quarterback is what their goal is, with as many fresh bodies as they can. You know, you play three or four snaps, you come off, you catch your breath, you go back in, and you do it all over again. I think that's really the mantra that Saleh wants in his all gas, no breaks, and his fast and violent approach.
You're certainly hoping that the front seven, the defensive line in particular, can take a little heat off of the secondary. But that being said, we know it's hard to find corners off the waiver wire and things like that, but they have a high waiver wire pick. Do you think that they will make a pickup of some sort to bolster the corner position if they can find it at all?
Yeah, I can't rule it out. I mean, I think, you know, Joshua Williams looks like he's fairly solid. Micah Robinson looks like he's kind of coming on. I think they had hoped maybe that Nazee Johnson could be that fifth guy or maybe fourth guy and bump Robinson down to fifth. But with him getting that six-game suspension to start the season, I think it's almost a must that they scour the waiver wire and try to find somebody to come in and provide some depth and also help on special teams from the cornerback spot.
Well, I guess we were kicking around, you know, what to expect from here forward from Will Levis. We know that – I think we're all sitting here waiting for the other shoe to drop. But what's your thought on how he's playing, how he's handled himself these last couple of days as he waits for the next chapter?
Actually, the last two practices, I think he's been really good. You know, I mean, he was a little spotty, you know, early in camp and, you know, didn't look great in the preseason game against San Francisco, with, you know, with some protection troubles. He misfired on a couple of throws. But I think, and I actually talked to Will today, you know, for a story that I'm doing, and you know, he said that every day he feels like, you know, he's starting to get a little bit more like, you know, feeling more comfortable, that, you know, the year off, you know, is starting to, you know, he's starting to put that behind him, shake off some of the rust. And I think his confidence is growing. I think he's actually played pretty well. The interesting thing is going to be, you know, really, you know, what is the quarterback market going to look like at cutdown? Because are the Vikings going to try to move J.J. McCarthy? Are the Colts going to try to remove Anthony Richardson? What are the Steelers doing with their guys where they've got four guys in camp, you know, may not have room for all of them on the roster? So it's an interesting situation. You know, I'm of the opinion that the guy's talented enough that you don't just give him away. You make somebody give you something for him, and if nobody will, you keep him around just in case, you know, you need him. But, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, he, in his heart of hearts, he probably would like to go somewhere where he can at least compete to start. And if that doesn't happen this year, he'll be a free agent. He can go find it next year.
Now, Terry, we're trying to figure out why, you know, and it's only been one game and one practice against another team. But what we're seeing on the practice field isn't translating to what we have seen, you know, during the first preseason game. And before that, the practice against San Francisco. Do you think there will be – how much game planning do you think we will see this Sunday? Because I would tend to believe that they have to really sort of get into what they're going to do during the regular season. Because last week, I know everything was vanilla, but they didn't consistently, you know, move the ball down the field even with vanilla plays.
Yeah, I mean, they might try to scheme up a few things and try to, you know, give themselves some, you know, the opportunity to, you know, kind of throw some things in there that can help out Cam Ward, help out the offense. I think some of the reason that they struggled was it was the first time out against a different color jersey. You know, it's, you know, when you go against your own offense or your own defense day in, day out, you get overly familiar with each other's moves and what and each other's tendencies. And I think it was a little bit of a wake-up call when they went against the 49ers to say, hey, you know, some of these things that are happening good in practice didn't necessarily translate. I think you don't want to get too complicated. Maybe you want to, you know, throw a couple of extra things in there to try to help Cam and the offense look good. But I think really what you want to see out of the joint practice on Friday and the game on Sunday. I think you just want to see progress made and some of the stuff that he's starting to hit on the practice field show up in game settings.
Terry McCormick of Main Street Media is with us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Terry, where do you stand in the great post-49ers week Cam Ward debate of 2026?
Where do I stand? Oh, my gosh. I mean, I'm not worried about it, but it's a little concerning because I think what you want to see this week and then again against the Bears, you want to see progress. You don't want to see some of the same mistakes. You realize he's learning a new offense. You realize he's, you know, learning new coaches, and, you know, they run things completely differently than what the previous coaching staff did, and that's well, great and good, probably a benefit for him. But I think you just want to see him make progress. You know, I don't need to see him – I think a lot of people have said this. I don't need to see him swing for the fences and try to hit the home run all the time. It'll be fine if he can just, you know, get the singles and doubles and move the team down the field with sustained drives, much the way he did in the opening drive against the 49ers.
Along those lines, Terry, we had Blake Bedingfield on the program on Monday. He writes for PaulKaharsky.com, and his review of Cam Ward's performance against the Niners has been one of the most popular talking points over the past few days. He suggested that the Titans turn Cam Ward more into a Brock Purdy than a Patrick Mahomes. He used the label game manager, which we know is a naughty phrase to a lot of people in the game of football. What do you think of that idea of Cam Ward being more of a quote-unquote game manager than the gunslinger we know him to be?
Well, I think it's spot on. And I think if you go back to when, you know, Robert Saleh was first hired, somewhere buried in that introductory press conference, or maybe it was Brian Daboll's introductory press conference, I don't know if it was Saleh or Borgonzi or whoever said it, they said, right now we have a young quarterback and we are going to need to help him out until he's ready to elevate his game and carry the team. The team's going to have to help carry him. And I think that's exactly what Blake is talking about.
Terry McCormick of Main Street Media has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Terry, as always, a pleasure. We'll do this again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
615-737-1025. We'll switch gears here. Are we underestimating the Vols? Because I saw a lot of criticism of Heather Dinich's take of the Tennessee Volunteers on the Pat McAfee show the other day. I'm wondering if we're underestimating the team in Knoxville. We'll discuss coming up next. 615-737-1025. Speaking of college football, I was too lazy to come up with a trivia question today, so we're going to give away tickets, and all you need to do is call 615-737-1025. If you want a pair of tickets to the Liberty Mutual Music City kickoff game, Ole Miss versus Louisville at Nissan Stadium on Sunday, September 6th, be caller number 5 right now, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to the Liberty Mutual Music City kickoff game, Ole Miss versus Louisville, Nissan Stadium, Sunday, September 6th. Caller number 5. Good luck. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Man,
you go to the SEC on the outside looking in, and I can't believe Tennessee is even ranked.
What?
Love it.
Why is Tennessee ranked, let alone number 20? I mean, they better find a quarterback and find some answers fast there. I have so many questions about them. Not to say they can't do it, but preseason, based on answers, not question, I don't know why the Vols are in there.
That was Heather Dinich of ESPN on the Pat McAfee show. Easy for me to say. Pat McAfee show the other day. Flabbergasted that Tennessee was ranked in the AP preseason poll at number 20. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. So are we underestimating the Vols? It's always a popular question around here. One interesting note about the Vols this season, and by the way, if this is something that you're interested in, I saw earlier today that the Vols in Alabama announced that for their next two matchups. It's color on color, red versus orange, jersey-wise. That will be cool. So I think it's the first time since 1970 I heard that they will be wearing orange and red in the same matchup. So
crimson.
Whatever. It's red. It's red. Sorry, Alabama fans. I'm not steeped in your lore.
If you had a black and white TV, would you be able to tell the difference between the two jerseys on TV if they're both wearing the solid color?
I don't know.
I think it could be questionable.
Well, if you have a black and white TV, call us back after the third Saturday in October, right?
Let me know how that goes.
Okay. Make a note of it. Call us back in a couple of months. But here's an interesting note about the Vols. They play four games against teams in the top 13 in the AP preseason poll. Three of those games are at home. The Vols play Texas, Alabama, and LSU at Neyland Stadium. They travel to Texas A&M. So three of their four ranked matchups so far at Neyland Stadium. So do we side with Hedder Dinich here, guys? Is it laughable that Tennessee is number 20 in the preseason
Come
bowl?
On.
Or
Come on.
Are we she underestimating was, the Vols?
She was grandstanding for the TV show that she over the top. She knows that Tennessee is a legit top 25 caliber team. The one question is, will they get good quarterback play? It's very similar to Vanderbilt, I think. I think the rest of the roster, Tennessee feels pretty good about. Chad Withrow was talking about that on our show last week, that their budget, that what they're spending on their roster, they can compete with anybody, right? They've got players. They've had a couple of injuries during the training camp and, of course, the unfortunate suspension for the first couple of games. But that in the big picture, that's not a killer. But it's going to come down to, do they get the good quarterback play? And I think, Derek, what you've always said about their offense, right? They're going to score points. It's a matter of, can you be efficient while scoring a lot of points? Because at the end of the year, whoever is playing quarterback for Tennessee is going to have a lot of touchdown passes. There's going to be a lot of points. But it's, you have to be really good because it's a high pace and you're probably going to give up a lot of points. And if you turn over the ball at the wrong time, your stats could look good, but that one or two mistakes that you make could cost you games. And I think that was the deal with Aguilar. But I'm curious how quick they can get those quarterbacks going.
Well, a lot of it is going to hinge on that, whether it's McIntyre or Faison Brandon. You know, that offense is going to score points. You know, and I think the reason it works so well, they need someone like Hendon Hooker, someone that knows how to run an offense and can be efficient within the offense, because the offense itself and the talent around is going to allow you to score a bunch of points at time. But who can manage the game? Who can hit the open guy when he needs to hit the – that's why Hendon Hooker was so good in that offense, and Aguilar was good to a point in that offense. They need someone that can run it efficiently. They can lean on their running game with Bishop coming back. So that's a good thing. Their linebacker crew. That second game, you said that the suspension may not hurt them, but he's gone for two games and they play Georgia Tech the second game?
Right.
That's going to be a big out-of-conference game for UT. So they need all hands on deck. And if they're missing their best player on defense, it will hurt them at some point in that game, I believe.
And again, Adam, I'm going to go back to my theme. And I can see somebody, whether it be Hedder Dinich or any voter of the top 25, you could rule Tennessee out of a top 25. You can make an argument to not vote them into the top 25 because of how hard the schedule is. But that doesn't mean they're not a good team. I think that is what I'm going to stress all year long. There are going to be some good teams in this league because of the ninth game. You're going to have to recalibrate what you think is a good season. I think you could be a good team with that schedule and be something like 7-5. And I'm curious how the diehard Tennessee fans who they want that next level, they want playoffs, they want to get back in there, they're spending the money, they have the resources, they got the fan base. How are they going to feel if it's a 7-5 year, but your losses are against the really good teams? That was basically what cost them last year. They were close to being a playoff team last year, But in the big key games, they had Georgia beat. Didn't quite do it. Couldn't beat Vanderbilt late. They lost to Oklahoma in a game where they had a lot of turnovers and some wacky stuff happened in that game. But they only lost to playoff caliber teams, right? It's not like they lost any cupcakes. So it's going to be, can they beat a couple of really good teams on that schedule to make the difference?
And it should be advantageous because, as I said, Texas, Alabama, and LSU at Neyland Stadium this season. Texas A&M, the only quote-unquote tough game on the road. One texter says, first time since the 70s, wrong. They used to always play red on orange. Or I'm sorry, as I have been corrected, crimson.
Mm-hmm. It's the crimson tide, not the red tide, pal.
From the Tennessee website, this will be the first time since October 17th, 1970, in Neyland Stadium that the teams will wear orange and crimson jerseys respectively. So straight from the source, first time since 1970. Again, if that is something you care about. But I imagine it's going to look pretty cool.
I think it'll look cool. I think those colors of the both teams has always been like an October thing. Like the leaves are changing. They always play in October. It's a cool atmosphere at those games.
So you mentioned 7-5, Willie. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic in his SEC preview has the Vols indeed finishing the season 7-5, 4-5 in the conference. And then Mandel had his 10 predictions for the SEC this season. Number 7, Tennessee fans get mad at Josh Heupel. The Vols head coach got a pass for last year's slip to 8-5, knowing Nico Iamaliava bailed on him in the spring, but he's going to be trotting out an inexperienced quarterback, whether it's Faison Brandon or George McIntyre, to go with a rebuilding defense. If the Vols take another step back, Heupel will go into 2027 on the hot seat.
Here's the crazy part about it. This is funny to me, actually. SEC fans, you're screaming about how deep and how good your conference is, but when one of your teams slips in a really deep and good conference, it's like, fire the coach. Get on
that's,
them.
Dude, and that's the problem. Like, that's
you
always
can't have
been.
It both ways.
Well, that's always been something that is happening to two or three or four programs every given year because not everybody can win every game, but everybody expects to win every game.
Yeah.
Right, that's how that's worked. And so I think that's a key question for Tennessee fans. I would throw that out there. I'd love to hear some feedback. If it looks like that, if they go 7-5, but, for example, if they found the quarterback among these two guys and they're like, man, they lost a few close games this year against good teams, but they're set at that position going forward. We feel like they've got the money for the rest of the roster. And it sets the stage for bigger expectations next year. Would you be good with that? Or do you agree with Mandel saying 7-5 regardless is going to put you on the hot seat in that job?
You can let us know, Vols fans, 615-737-1025. Just as Clark Lee has not tipped his hand about his quarterback decision, Josh Heupel hasn't either. He said after the most recent scrimmage in Neyland Stadium, quote, I already named him out there. You guys didn't pay attention when talking about who his starting quarterback is going to be. He is not tipping his hand between Brandon and McIntyre.
But I'm sure the guys feel it on the team that who's leaning more toward being a starter and who's not. So, you know, I'm sure even Heupel probably has a leaning one way or the other, but he wants this thing to continue to play out through camp. Because, again, you don't have a quote-unquote preseason to get these guys ready. Yeah, you're going to have some easy games to start off, but even your second game is going to be a difficult one. So you need to hopefully whoever you choose, whether it's McIntosh or Brandon, that they're ready for, you know, not just that first game, but that second game.
It doesn't sound like either quarterback has really pulled away from the other in the quarterback competition in Knoxville. But yes, I am curious to hear from Vols fans about how you would feel with a 7-5 season. Let's go to James in Ashland City on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. James, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Well, huge Vol fan, I'm going to address your question, then I'm going to expand it to the whole conference. 7-5 would be very unacceptable, regardless of the suspensions, regardless of the injuries. You know, this is Heupel's, what, fifth year? No, that's unacceptable. You got to win more games. Plus, you got the big games at home. You got Texas, Alabama, LSU at home. So I'm looking for a better season than 7-5. But what I wanted to talk about, it's not just what's really crazy about the season. It's not just Tennessee that hasn't decided on a quarterback. Vandy hasn't done it yet. Alabama hasn't decided who's going to be their quarterback. I'll be honest with you guys, this is one year that I cannot remember in past years where I really just don't have an idea on, other than Texas and Georgia, I don't know how Alabama's going to be. I don't know how Tennessee's going to be. Will Florida bounce back? Will A&M take the next step? I can't remember a year. And Willie, you tell me if you can think of another year. You've been in Nashville a long time. If you can think of a year where there's so much uncertainty in the conference. And also, Derek, I just wanted to let you know, been meaning to ask you this for several years, and I've always forgot to do it. When you were getting your recruiting process, mm-hmm. were you recruited by any SEC schools during that recruiting process? And I'll hang up and listen. And I think I've told you this before, Derek. Mm-hmm. In the history of Michigan State and Tennessee, those two schools have never, ever played. Let that sink in, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, James.
I didn't know that. I didn't realize that those two teams. But I tell you what, I was recruited by UT early on. But then after a certain point, they just stopped. For whatever reason, they just stopped recruiting me.
They're lost.
But I wanted to go because we had, Aaron Hayden, who was who played in Knoxville. He had a really good career in Knoxville. He was a running back in my high school. So when he went to UT, that made me even more excited once I started playing, that I started getting letters from University of Tennessee. But it only happened for because back then they recruited different. A lot of stuff didn't start until like your junior and your senior year, really late in your junior year, going into your senior year. So they were recruiting me all the way up to my senior year, I think the middle of the season. Then obviously it just stopped.
Was that Majors as the coach?
Yeah, Majors was the coach at the time. So
Willie, what about James's question about the uncertainty at quarterback at multiple multiple schools?
I think the coaches probably have a better idea of what they think is going to happen by now than they're saying publicly. But I see his point. Look, I can't go through the whole history, but I think with what is happening now, and take Tennessee and Vanderbilt, they both have some highly recruited quarterbacks that have some tools. They've got some talent, at least coming out of their high school. But in this day and age, it's hard for those guys to come in and have immediate success. And now you have the option at a lot of these schools of bringing in somebody who's played a lot of games and inserting him straight into the lineup. Those guys are much more capable of coming in and having immediate success. So that's why I think you have a lot of these battles. But that's why sometimes I think it might take a year to shake out. Like for Vanderbilt, I'm really excited about what they could look like next year in a second year of Jared Curtis. Mm-hmm. And I think the same could be true for Josh Heupel in Tennessee. That's why I asked the question of, would you look at it in a two-year situation? And unlike, see, that what he called about, that's exactly the mentality of most SEC teams who they want to win right now. They don't mm-hmm. want to hear about next year. They want to hear about this year.
But it's like you're even –
Alabama, I think, is a younger team. I think Alabama could be a lot better next year if they take a year to sort of shake things out and find their quarterback.
But even the caller was, even though he said that 7-5 is unacceptable, but then he went on to tell us, as we already knew, well, UT have their own quarterback battles, and they haven't named the quarterback. You look at Alabama. So he named about four teams that haven't, made a decision on who their starting quarterback is. And my thing is, if you know that as a fan base, and you know this could be an up and down thing, because when you got to think this long about your quarterback, and you're not going to name him really into the first game of the season, you're hoping that he continues to mature as the season goes. He's just the guy that is just a little bit further along than the guy behind him. But if it doesn't work out that way, you have to think as a fan, 7-5 in a division like the SEC is really good based on what I know is going on with the team as far as with the quarterback. But I don't think they look at it that way.
615-737-1025. One, are we underestimating Tennessee football? Two, Vols fans out there. James in Ashland City says, 7-5, unacceptable for the Vols this season. What's the bare minimum win-loss record you would accept for the Vols this season? 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction and continue the conversation coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Is this the first time that Thong Song has been played on these airwaves? As we approach our 15th birthday?
I'm not sure. Possibly. Could be. Maybe. Maybe not. At least on this show for us. Definitely.
it's the first one I can recall. Yeah. First time I can recall this has been played.
So you just are the first.
More awesomely bad songs. For
I'm
you.
Not sure this one's in the awesomely
you
bad.
You think that song's
this
one awfully just bad? Just
awesomely. Awesomely. Awesomely bad.
Awesomely bad?
Like yes. Bad in a good way.
Yes.
This one, okay. That one I can't go with. I think that's just straight up not good.
You don't think that song's good?
I don't think that's a good song.
I second this. I'm with Willie.
Okay. Okay, when you say a good song, are you meaning like, it's not a song that you can listen to everywhere?
Well, that's for sure.
It's really just like a club song, honestly. It's just like
Right.
When I think awesomely bad, I think that song is so bad.
It's good.
It's good. It's good. Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you listen to the lyrics, it's just...
It's self-explanatory. Let me see that thong. That's all you need to know.
I mean, I guess, yeah. It's not, can I sit down and talk to you?
No. Cisco wasn't doing any talking.
Can we have dinner?
No.
He's a busy guy. He's in a rush.
So it's... I'm just asking, like... Hey, isn't that typically what you say? Hey, lady, let's go out to dinner.
That was a Jodeci song, D-Mace.
Yeah, you're right.
Greg says, I guarantee the thong song was played on your predecessor, 1025 The Party.
I'm sure.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Highly possible. Highly possible.
Is there any 1025 The Party merch floating around anywhere?
I'm sure if you look in some closets here, you could find. Actually, we did clean all that stuff out. Remember that a couple of years ago? We went through everything. We found some archives, and we found some fun stuff in the filing cabinets.
Oh, man.
One texter says, don't appreciate the Cisco shade, Derek.
Hey, I'm not giving Cisco shade.
You were sticking up for Cisco. Actually, I think it was Willie. It was Willie with the Cisco shade.
I was raining on the parade a little bit.
Yes, I was sticking up for Cisco a little bit, you know?
Willie Donick, not a thong guy. That's what I've learned today.
The thong song.
Exactly.
The song. Oh, I'm sorry. Not the thong song guy. I forgot the song part. Okay, hold on. Back to the Vols for a moment. Scott says, I have low expectations. 7-5 may be generous. They are thin on the defensive line. They just lost their best starting safety for the year. If they have one more injury at safety, they are probably losing to Furman. Neither quarterback has proven anything at all. Under Josh Heupel, even better teams lose dumb games on the road. They have to stop losing to Arkansas and South Carolina on the road.
Hey, but y'all conference deep. That's going to be a tough game.
And that's why I think the 7-5 is the old 8-4. Like I really think in some years there are some teams that are going to have an extra loss just because they're playing another good team.
Not because they're bad.
No, not if they are end up in the section of the league that I think is most likely, and I would put Vanderbilt in this. There's a lot of teams that could end up being in the middle. They're not all going to end up winning all those swing games, and their record could be around 7-5. But for some of those teams, it's not good enough.
And
other teams would be like, okay, we're all
right
with
that. If you're curious, here are Stuart Mandel's of the Athletics, SEC predictions, overall records. He has Texas, Oklahoma, and Georgia at 10-2. He has LSU, Alabama, and Florida at 9-3. He has Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Missouri at 8-4. Tennessee and South Carolina at 7-5. Vanderbilt and Auburn at 6-6. Kentucky at 4-8. Mississippi State at 3-9. Arkansas at 2-10.
So, basically, you know, obviously this, again, it's top heavy, just like any other conference. The SEC.
Mandel has Texas winning the league at 8-1 in conference.
Right, so he has nobody with less than two losses in the entire league. So that is a reflection of the depth of the schedule.
The depth.
Well, he's saying one of the losses is going to be the Ohio State. That's what he's saying for Texas.
Yeah. Yes. One of his predictions is Texas loses to Ohio State again. Everyone freaks out. Then the Longhorns go on to win the SEC.
Now they do have Texas. Is playing Ohio State at Texas, right? They've got them at home this year.
Mm-hmm. And then what he's saying is they're still not.
But if you look at, Texas's, I mean, it's a murderer's row schedule.
No, of course, I'm not saying that it's not.
That's a really tough schedule. So that's what I'm trying to push is all 10-2s are not the same. 10-2 for Texas would be quite a bit different than 10-2 for Notre Dame. Just based on who they're playing. Or at least the way it appears now, it may not play out quite how it looks now, but I got a pretty good feeling. At the end of the year, Texas is going to be singing the depth and the strength of schedule songs.
One texter says, if you go 7-5 at Vanderbilt for a decade, they will erect a statue.
I mean, listen, as competitive as everyone continues to say the SEC is, and I'm not disagreeing, you know, I think that 7-5, like Willie said, is the new 8-4. And but some programs are just not going to be okay with the 7-5, i.e. UT.
Here's an interesting text. The problem with college football and fan perception is that 7-5 or 8-4 means absolutely nothing. You have accomplished nothing. Meanwhile, 9-8 and 10-7 gets you into the NFL playoffs most years. Now with the modern parity in the SEC, that's a much more fair comparison.
Well, that's you know, this is why I think they want 24 teams.
Yes.
For reasons like this, where a 8-4 team from the SEC will more than likely get in. You have a couple of those teams that are 8-4 because they look at it as the strength of schedule.
And that's it. That is where the strength of schedule, I think, will make the difference, right?
Yeah.
But I think that mentality by that texter, especially with the de-emphasizing of the bowl games, right? You 8-4 back in the day, hey, all right, 8-4, not our best year, but we're going to the Gator Bowl or something like that, and that used to mean something. Now, when you say, you've accomplished nothing, I mean, that's not really fair, is it? Like, we're back in the previous era, in the bowl era, if you went 8-4 and you won the Gator Bowl, you'd feel pretty good. You'd have a decent feeling at the end of the year. Now that is kind of out the window with the playoff system. It's like, did you make the playoffs? No. Well, you didn't do anything. But there's a big difference between 8-4 and 4-8, especially if you're playing really good teams week in and week out and only two cupcakes are on your schedule instead of three, or back in the day, you could go four if you wanted to.
The one thing Vols fans are emphasizing is that three of their four hardest games this season, so far, based on the preseason AP poll, three of their four hardest games this season are at Neyland Stadium. They play Texas at Neyland Stadium. They play Alabama at Neyland Stadium. They play LSU at Neyland Stadium. It would be one thing if it was flipped, where three of the four hardest games were on the road, but three or four are at home. So I think that raises those expectations. If you can't take care of business on your home field, what are we even doing?
Okay, so now list their four, because some teams have five road games in league play. Vanderbilt is one of them. Tennessee, I think, has four. Tell me the road games that they play within the league.
All right, here we go.
Because you used to be able to have a year or two where you'd play, if you had eight, I mean, you played
maximum. Here is Tennessee's, just for kicks and giggles, here is Tennessee's full SEC slate. Home to Texas, home to Auburn, at Arkansas, home to Alabama, at South Carolina, home to Kentucky, at Texas A&M, home to LSU, at Vanderbilt.
So When they come to Vanderbilt, you think they're just going to roll? Hey, they got the tough games at home. So that's an easy one you're talking about at Vanderbilt, the last game of the season? Think that's going to be easy? I'm throwing it out there. Think it'll be easy? You got that one down as a win?
I mean, the Commodores went into your house and pushed you around last season.
Well, and also, like I said yesterday, I used the example of Georgia's SEC opener at Arkansas. Georgia will be favored by, I don't know, 12, 14, maybe more points. But Arkansas is an atmosphere. They're going to have a huge crowd. South Carolina will be the same for Tennessee. Tennessee fans can remember some nightmares at South Carolina.
Not many.
They've been beaten at South Carolina a couple times. But South Carolina, who year in and year out is not a great team, that is an underrated atmosphere. When Vanderbilt beat them last year, they were ranked at South Carolina, was hyped up, top 10 kind of thing.
And then what happened?
Vanderbilt trounced them.
And that did what?
And in that day, that was a big win. By the end of the year, you look back and say, well, they beat South Carolina, who was 4-8. But that discounts the atmosphere in the moment at that time. So these are tough games is what I'm getting at. There's no gimmies in the league, I think, as much as there used to be.
Dwight says, so I'm an SEC guy and have been all my life, in parentheses, Roll Tide. Between D-Mace and Willie's arguments, I understand both sides. With Willie's side, we all joke and say what's their strength of schedule to literally everything. But I'm leaning more on D-Mace's side, because if you are a player, the schedule shouldn't matter. Whoever is in our way, we need to beat them to get into the playoff and win a championship. If you lose, that's on you. No excuses.
Okay.
There you go. All right. Really see more. I'm getting people more and more to think more along the lines of what I'm thinking. But here again, you talk about these atmospheres. How wild was that atmosphere in South Carolina for about 10 minutes? That's it. And after that, Van just took him out. The quarterback got hurt, what?
Towards the end of the first half.
So it was gone. If Georgia goes to Arkansas, how long do you think that atmosphere is going to last? 5 minutes?
It depends on how the home team does. You think that, well, we'll see.
Because once
we'll
I score two or three touchdowns, and that's
I hope it lasts 5 minutes, because Arkansas comes to Nashville. Vanderbilt needs to beat Arkansas. Like that's one where you're trying to hold serve.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt did not lose a game at home last year. Undefeated. I don't know if that'll happen this year, but it's the same mentality. When you're at home, you do feel like there's a home field advantage, right?
Of course you should feel, but you got to play to keep that home field advantage. Yeah. You got to play well. Now, UT has, what, 5 home games? You said 5 and 4 away games?
Hold on. Home games against Texas, Auburn, Alabama, Kentucky, and LSU.
Yeah, so 5-4. So, I mean, they should be, if they take advantage of their home field advantage, because they have a very loud stadium and one of the better ones in the country, then yes, this may be a tough game. But if the quarterbacks aren't what the fan base is expecting, then you're going to have a struggle. And that home sort of home field advantage you get is going to be gone very quickly.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, our old buddy Jonathan Hutton is going to join the program. Hutton and also our friend Chad Withrow. Hutton and Withrow is now part of the new Sport and State venture started by Clay Travis. Their show debuted today, 7 to 9 a.m. Central, here on weekdays. Not here on 102.5 The Game, but here in Nashville. We will have Hutton coming up next. We'll talk Titans. We'll talk SEC. We'll talk everything with our pal Jonathan Hutton coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.